you. Thank you to PERC for having me on behalf of the new AT&T, and as a new part of the new AT&T. Bob asked me if I was getting used to saying that, and I said no. The first time a new boss called me, I answered the phone bell south. That was probably not very good. But I was noticing there's a lot of former and current AT&T employees up here, so things come full circle. And in my new role, I actually, can y'all hear? Is that better? Okay. Jeremy read my previous job. As of last week, I now also have responsibility for network and services transformation. And that will be my new role at AT&T in the Strategic Policy and Planning Group and Regulatory. So it actually merges well with what we're talking about today. I'm going to go quickly through these slides because I think that everybody has heard this story, but I think it's a good backdrop. The way we communicate certainly has changed. These are two views from a nationwide perspective and from a Florida perspective of wireless phones and wireline phones. I know that just 10 years ago, I would not have believed that my mother, my father, my grandmother would all have cell phones and would use them. So it certainly has changed the way that people on their daily lives do business. This is a view of broadband, the upper left-hand showing a Yankee Group forecast of current both subscribership from a household and then users' perspective, and then the bottom right showing the Florida report, and we've already talked a fair amount about that today, so I'll do that. I think it's pivotal to think about the backdrop and where we've come from. Yesterday, regulation was really based on pre-converged network models. We had cable companies using coax to provide video completely under the premise of Title VI. We had wireless companies using cell towers to relay voice calls under Title III regulation. And we had wireline companies largely providing voice under Title II. And then this thing called broadband came upon, kind of into the game a little late, and cable and wireline DSL were regulated differently up until the Title I order last year. But largely, this is how we've thought about things. So there were really kind of three factors that drove network change, and they didn't all drive each other. It just kind of happened at the same time. Technological change, consumer demand for bundled services, and providers seeking increased efficiencies. Let's talk first about the technological change. We've already talked a little bit about this from a regulatory perspective, but then when you overlay that on the network perspective, you really had distinct networks. Video providing video data, usually over a frame or ATM-type backbone, providing data services to large businesses and enterprise and wholesale customers. Internet access over an IP backbone, largely residential, DSL, small business. And then you had wireless through metzone and circuit hierarchy, providing wireless cell service, and voice over a class 4 and 5 switch hierarchy, providing voice. And that's still largely the way we are today. We are just on the edge of this convergence. But tomorrow, we are really looking at a single backbone that will just integrate all of those applications. Another way to look at this is moving from the siloed type approach to an integrated approach. So moving from three distinct towers of how services work to really a broadband connection with IP or MPLS or even what comes the successor to those. We sometimes get stuck on IP, but I think we have to recognize that that's not the end. That's just where we're at today. The next thing that really kind of drove change was really consumer demand. We got lots of, wireless came about, broadband came about, people had lots of choices and competition, and that was good, and they liked it. But then consumers started saying, all right, this is a little much to manage. I thought this was interesting. Somebody who works with me pulled this off the internet in about 30 minutes. And she was, we just went out and said, okay, let's just find some snippets of who's doing what. And it doesn't take long to find them. Up on here, I hope you can, I'm not sure how well you can see it, but you've got Comcast, Bright House, Earthlink, Bell South, and maybe a few others, all advertising a triple play or a quadruple play. And then you've got, obviously, Owen Cox on there, too. You've got, tons of wireless providers, and then you've got your over-the-top application providers like Vonage and Netflix and people who are providing services that, 5 years ago we never thought about as end-user residential customers. And then the last kind of factor in the bundle or in this trio that really drove change was providers seeking increased efficiencies. This is a great chart, and hopefully you can pick up the paper version to really look at it. The chart on the top left shows the number of hosts advertised in the domain naming system. So this is kind of the www.whatever.com. And just look at the slope. I mean, that's really all you need to look at is that curve. The one on the top right are the global internet user estimates. This is obviously a hard data point to gather, but it really shows it going from, you know, right about 500 million in April 2002 to over a billion in December 2006. And then down at the bottom has some estimates of revenues for online application type products. So everything from broadband music revenues to online gaming to VoIP revenues and IPTV revenues. And obviously those are just starting to become sources of main revenues, but you'll see that the projection out through 2010 is quite impressive. I think my number one thing that I like about this slide is the little bullet that says backbone load doubles every 12 to 15 months. And Bob talked about this a little bit earlier in his presentation, but that's a tremendous fact that we are at a critical point of what does that really mean for the future. This is a great story and very interesting about the last 5 years. What are we about to see, and how does that backbone load doubling really play in? This is the IP traffic growth that AT&T has seen on its network from March 02 to March 06. And it has it broken down by the types of traffic. So everything from, you know, non-real bandwidth intensive things like web surfing and email to file sharing, FTP sites, gaming, real-time multimedia type things. And again, you'll notice that that's the same curve that we saw with the DNS hosting earlier. So what is the impact on investment? Well, obviously, as everybody has been saying, increased usage is driving more bandwidth needs on the backbone. So you have kind of that piece of it. But then also, increased applications, and especially with the triple play of video, are driving more bandwidth needs in the last mile. And those two have historically been dealt with differently in how we manage our networks, but they all lead to investment. Some in the last mile upgrades of fiber to the home, to the curb, and to the node. Others in the bandwidth of just putting more backbone capacity out. Interestingly, it's not just about a one-sided driving force of the companies are innovating or creating things. It's really the push and pull of consumers who have, and application providers largely, who have created environments that are creating, you know, file sharing. That's not something really that any business set out to create. There are some that are very facilitating that in a large way, Akamai and others. But really, that was kind of a consumer-driven and application-driven type situation. On the other hand, the network providers are trying to figure out how are we going to continue to meet the needs of what we want to do and products we want to sell, but also we've got consumers driving up bandwidth. So those two kind of pushed and pulled on each other to really create an explosion of innovation and really great things for end users. It leaves us with the same question we've all been talking about is, what does that mean for the network? Okay, this slide takes a little talking through. But I love it because I think what it shows is you've got the last mile issue, and obviously you've got to build out to get there. But in the backbone, you've really got some ability to deal with things not just in a way of build more, build more, build more. We're going to have to do that, but we can also create the network in a way that allows for efficiencies and the use of those efficiencies. So this matrix is set up to kind of show things that will tolerate delay furthest on the right, things that are bursty in nature. You all know the email analogy of the email getting put into little packets and addressed, and it goes its different route ways, and it reassembles at the end. So obviously, that's a bursty type application, and it's okay that it's bursty and that things don't get there all at the same time, as long as they end up in the right place and get reassembled correctly. And then you have kind of what is the packet size. And so when you think of all three of these on this dimensional chart, I think what it shows you is there are going to be some applications that are not going to tolerate delay, that are not bursty, and that are just quite frankly bandwidth hogs. And those things are going to have to, if we want to be able to utilize all that we have, are going to have to take priority over certain things. So telemarketing and medicine, video conferencing, anything where a delay is going to really cause a problem. But then we've got other applications that are more tolerant of delay and will allow us to utilize the burstiness to prioritize them and go their routes and get there and reassemble. So that's just another way to think about how are we going to solve this bandwidth problem. So now let's move to the impact on consumers. This is a chart of the former Bell South region because it only ends up in October of 06 with broadband pricing. And you'll see our 1.5 is our offer that we went out with initially and the green line and the pricing of that. We then came in with a 256K product, and that was really to attract the dial-up users, to say, okay, we hear you, you don't want to pay quite as much, you're not sure if you want broadband because you don't really think you need the speed, but you'd like the ability to talk on your phone and surf the internet at the same time. And so that was a product that was designed for that market. We came out with a 3-meg product later, and then most recently a 6-meg product in certain areas where we had that capacity. And this shows you the also the price decreases over time, and although it's been at different points, it really does show, I think, a great story of what competition is doing to bring those prices down. And these are not promotional prices. This is our kind of everyday pricing, and then on top of this, we obviously have promotions. And if you buy a bundle or something like that, you get a better price point as well. And I've already talked a little bit about the bundle discounts. And then again, video. Competition for internet and telephony is going to continue and expand into the video services, and we're already seeing that. I think one of the interesting things that just hit me as I was sitting up here listening to Chris talk was this is really what competition is about. He's getting up talking about how great his products are and how great they're going to do in the market, and I'm up here telling you how great we are and how great we're going to do. And that's sustainable competition. And that's where you've got investment involved, and both our companies are still willing to say that. So we've talked about what is the impact on consumers, what is the impact on investment, and I flipped my words on this intentionally. Now I'm going to talk about what is the regulatory impact, because this is an issue where policymakers really do impact what we're doing, not just that what we're doing impacts others. And I think we have to stop and ask ourselves, should we regulate before how do we regulate? We always, as policymakers, I think, tend to jump to how should this be regulated, and really we need to stop and think, what does the marketplace really look like, and what is really going on, and what needs to be regulated? And obviously there are public safety and public interest type environments that are important and need to be addressed, and that's really even more important as we get to having multiple players who provide multiple services that are not all the same. We've got to get to a common set of obligations around 911, universal service fund, telephone relay system, all of the things that are public interest and public safety. And CALEA is going to be huge in this in the future as we create these new networks. More and more opportunities for assisting government exist, but also more and more inherent difficulty in doing things that traditionally we've done. And so I think we have to really focus on those areas. And then finally, the legislative impact. And just wanted to spend a few times talking about updating the laws to encourage video entry. And Bob got the question earlier about this. Obviously, I agree with his answer. The video network that we are deploying is a regional network. It is not the architecture is not specific. And as we've negotiated in areas where we don't have statewide franchise, our history has been in the AT&T state that, you really do get to a point with the local government where everybody realizes this is not a cable system. This is a different architecture, and these are different technological things that don't facilitate the same types of regulation that we've had in the past. So just to wrap up, I think that we sit up here, and Chris did a great job talking about some of the features of the cable product, and obviously IPTV holds that same promise with all of those tremendous things. But the key of all that is we are really just at the beginning. The convergence and all the things that it has to offer, I would say that if we think about how things have changed in the last 10 years, I'd predict that somebody will be up here not in 10 more years, but in 5 years, and none of us will really will be able to say everything that a consumer is going to have embraced. And that is really, I think, what drives my company. Well, I know it's what drives my company. I would guess it's what drives Chris's company to invest. Because, we hear Wall Street saying, oh, gloom and doom, you get punished for investment. But we know that the services that are going to be provided are not just going to be the same services today at a lower price point. It's going to be more services and more value. And then finally, just as I said earlier, I think we really have to think about regulation has the power to unleash this innovation or hamper it, and also the investment that needs to come with it to make it real for consumers. Thank you.